Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, originally published through Capstone. The original material in this book is a reproduction of the complete 1937 edition of Think and Grow Rich, Teaching for the First Time, the famous Andrew Carnegie formula for money making, based upon the 13 proven steps to riches written by Napoleon Hill, printed August 1937, published by the Ralston Society, Meriden, Connecticut, and is now in the public domain. This edition is not sponsored or endorsed by or otherwise affiliated with Napoleon Hill, his family and heirs, the Napoleon Hill Foundation, or the Ralston Society. Registered office, Capstone Publishing Limited, a Wiley company, The Atrium, Southern Gate, Chichester, West Sussex, P-O-19-8-S-Q, United Kingdom. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, electronic, mechanical, photocopying, recording, or otherwise, except as permitted by the UK Copyright Designs and Patents Act, without prior permission of the publisher. What do you want most, as appeared in the original edition? Is it money, fame, power, contentment, personality, peace of mind, happiness? The 13 steps to riches described in this book offer the shortest dependable philosophy of individual achievement ever presented for the benefit of the man or woman who is searching for a definite goal in life. Before beginning the book, you will profit greatly if you recognize the fact that the book was not written to entertain. You cannot digest the contents properly in a week or a month. After reading the book thoroughly, Dr. Miller Reese Hutchison, nationally known consulting engineer and longtime associate of Thomas A. Edison, said, "This is not a novel. It is a textbook on individual achievement that came directly from the experiences of hundreds of America's most successful men. It should be studied, digested, and meditated upon. No more than one chapter should be read in a single night. The reader should underline the sentences which impress him most. Later, he should go back to these marked lines and read them again. A real student will not merely read this book. He will absorb its contents and make them his own. This book should be adopted by all high schools, and no boy or girl should be permitted to graduate without having satisfactorily passed an examination on it. This philosophy will not take the place of the subjects taught in schools, but it will enable one to organize and apply the knowledge acquired and convert it into useful service and adequate compensation without waste of time." Dr. John R. Turner, Dean of the College of the City of New York, after having read the book, said, "The very best example of the soundness of this philosophy is your own son, Blair, whose dramatic story you have outlined in the chapter on desire." Dr. Turner had reference to the author's son, who, born without normal hearing capacity, not only avoided being a deaf mute, but actually converted his handicap into a priceless asset by applying the philosophy here described. The most profitable way to use this book. After reading the story, starting on page 66, you will realize that you are about to come into possession of a philosophy which can be transmuted into material wealth or serve as readily to bring you peace of mind, understanding, spiritual harmony, and in some instances, as in the case of the author's son, it can help you master physical affliction. The author discovered through personally analyzing hundreds of successful men that all of them followed the habit of exchanging ideas through what is commonly called conferences. When they had problems to be solved, they sat down together and talked freely until they discovered, from their joint contribution of ideas, a plan that would serve their purpose. You who read this book will get most out of it by putting into practice the mastermind principle described in the book. This you can do, as others are doing so successfully, by forming a study club, consisting of any desired number of people who are friendly and harmonious. The club should have a meeting at regular periods, as often as once each week. The procedure should consist of reading one chapter of the book at each meeting, after which the contents of the chapter should be freely discussed by all members. Each member should make notes, putting down all ideas of his own inspired by the discussion. Each member should carefully read and analyze each chapter several days prior to its open reading and joint discussion in the club. The reading at the club should be done by someone who reads well and understands how to put color and feeling into the lines. By following this plan, every reader will get from its pages not only the sum total of the best knowledge organized from the experience of hundreds of successful men, but more important by far, he will tap new sources of knowledge in his own mind as well as acquire knowledge of priceless value from every other person present. If you follow this plan persistently, you will be almost certain to uncover and appropriate the secret formula by which Andrew Carnegie acquired his huge fortune, as referred to in the author's introduction. Publisher's preface to the original edition. This book conveys the experience of more than 500 men of great wealth who began at scratch with nothing to give in return for riches except thoughts, ideas, and organized plans. Here you have the entire philosophy of money making, just as it was organized from the actual achievements of the most successful men known to the American people during the past 50 years. It describes what to do, also how to do it. It presents complete instructions on how to sell your personal services. It provides you with a perfect system of self-analysis that will readily disclose what has been standing between you and the big money in the past. It describes the famous Andrew Carnegie formula of personal achievement by which he accumulated hundreds of millions of dollars for himself and made no fewer than a score of millionaires of men to whom he taught his secret. Perhaps you do not need all that is to be found in the book. No one of the 500 men from whose experiences it was written did, but you may need one idea, plan, or suggestion to start you toward your goal. Somewhere in the book, you will find this needed stimulus. The book was inspired by Andrew Carnegie after he had made millions and retired. It was written by the man to whom Carnegie disclosed the astounding secret of his riches, the same man to whom the 500 wealthy men revealed the source of their riches. In this volume will be found the 13 principles of money making essential to every person who accumulates sufficient money to guarantee financial independence. It is estimated that the research which went into the preparation before the book was written, or could be written, research covering more than 25 years of continuous effort, could not be duplicated at a cost of less than $100,000. Moreover, the knowledge contained in the book never can be duplicated at any cost, for the reason that more than half of the 500 men who supplied the information it brings have passed on. Riches cannot always be measured in money. Money and material things are essential for freedom of body and mind, but there are some who will feel that the greatest of all riches can be evaluated only in terms of lasting friendships, harmonious family relationships, sympathy and understanding between business associates, and introspective harmony, which brings one peace of mind measurable only in spiritual values. All who read, understand, and apply this philosophy will be better prepared to attract and enjoy these higher estates, which always have been and always will be denied to all except those who are ready for them. Be prepared, therefore, when you expose yourself to the influence of this philosophy, to experience a changed life, which may help you not only to negotiate your way through life with harmony and understanding, but also to prepare you for the accumulation of material riches in abundance. The publisher, The Ralston Society, 1937. Author's introduction to the original edition. In every chapter of this book, mention has been made of the money-making secret which has made fortunes for more than 500 exceedingly wealthy men, whom I have carefully analyzed over a long period of years. The secret was brought to my attention by Andrew Carnegie more than a quarter of a century ago. The canny, lovable old Scotsman carelessly tossed it into my mind when I was but a boy. Then he sat back in his chair with a merry twinkle in his eye and watched carefully to see if I had brains enough to understand the full significance of what he had said to me. When he saw that I had grasped the idea, he asked if I would be willing to spend 20 years or more preparing myself to take it to the world, to men and women who, without the secret, might go through life as failures. I said I would, and with Mr. Carnegie's cooperation, I have kept my promise. This book contains a secret after having been put to a practical test by thousands of people in almost every walk of life. It was Mr. Carnegie's idea that the magic formula, which gave him a stupendous fortune, ought to be placed within reach of people who do not have time to investigate how men make money, and it was his hope that I might test and demonstrate the soundness of the formula through the experience of men and women in every calling. He believed the formula should be taught in all public schools and colleges, and expressed the opinion that if it were properly taught, it would so revolutionize the entire educational system that the time spent in school could be reduced to less than half. His experience with Charles M. Schwab and other young men of Mr. Schwab's type convinced Mr. Carnegie that much of that which is taught in the schools is of no value whatsoever in connection with the business of earning a living or accumulating riches. He had arrived at this decision because he had taken into his business one young man after another, many of them with but little schooling, and by coaching them in the use of this formula, developed in them rare leadership. Moreover, his coaching made fortunes for every one of them who followed his instructions. In the chapter on faith, you will read the astounding story of the organization of the giant United States Steel Corporation, as it was conceived and carried out by one of the young men through whom Mr. Carnegie proved that his formula will work for all who are ready for it. The single application of the secret by that young man, Charles M. Schwab, made him a huge fortune in both money and opportunity. Roughly speaking, this particular application of the formula was worth $600 million. These facts, and they are facts well known to almost everyone who knew Mr. Carnegie, gave you a fair idea of what the reading of this book may bring to you, provided you know what it is that you want. Even before it had undergone 20 years of practical testing, the secret was passed on to more than 100,000 men and women who have used it for their personal benefit, as Mr. Carnegie planned that they should. Some have made fortunes with it. Others have used it successfully in creating harmony in their homes. A clergyman used it so effectively that it brought him an income of upwards of $75,000 a year. Arthur Nash, a Cincinnati tailor, used his near-bankrupt business as a guinea pig on which to test the formula. The business came to life and made a fortune for its owners. It is still thriving, although Mr. Nash has gone. The experiment was so unique that newspapers and magazines gave it more than $1 million worth of laudatory publicity. The secret was passed on to Stuart Austin Weir of Dallas, Texas. He was ready for it, so ready that he gave up his profession and studied law. Did he succeed? That story is told too. I gave the secret to Jennings Randolph the day he graduated from college, and he has used it so successfully that he is now serving his third term as a member of Congress, with an excellent opportunity to keep on using it until it carries him to the White House. While serving as advertising manager of the LaSalle Extension University, when it was little more than a name, I had the privilege of seeing J.G. Chapline, president of the university, use the formula so effectively that he has since made the LaSalle one of the great extension schools of the country. The secret to which I refer has been mentioned no fewer than 100 times throughout this book. It has been directly named, for it seems to work more successfully when it is merely uncovered and left in sight, where those who are ready and searching for it may pick it up. That is why Mr. Carnegie tossed it to me so quietly, without giving me its specific name. If you are ready to put it to use, you will recognize the secret at least once in every chapter. I wish I might feel privileged to tell you how you will know it if you are ready, but that would deprive you of much of the benefit you will receive when you make the discovery in your own way. While this book was being written, my own son, who was then finishing the last year of his college work, picked up the manuscript of Chapter 2, read it, and discovered the secret for himself. He used the information so effectively that he went directly into a responsible position at a beginning salary greater than the average man ever earns. His story has been briefly described in Chapter 2. When you read it, perhaps you will dismiss any feeling you may have had at the beginning of the book that it promised too much. And two, if you have ever been discouraged, if you have had difficulties surmount, which took the very soul out of you, if you have tried and failed, if you were ever handicapped by illness or physical affliction, this story of my son's discovery and use of the Carnegie formula may prove to be the oasis in the desert of lost hope for which you have been searching. This secret was extensively used by President Woodrow Wilson during the World War. It was passed on to every soldier who fought in the war, carefully wrapped in the training received before going to the front. President Wilson told me it was a strong factor in raising the funds needed for the war. More than 20 years ago, the Honorable Manuel L. Quezon, then resident commissioner of the Philippine Islands, was inspired by the secret to gain freedom for his people. He has gained freedom for the Philippines and is the first president of the free state. A peculiar thing about the secret is that those who once acquire it and use it find themselves literally swept on to success with but little effort, and they never again submit to failure. If you doubt this, study the names of those who have used it. Wherever they have been mentioned, check their records for yourself and be convinced. There is no such thing as something for nothing. The secret to which I refer cannot be had without a price, although the price is far less than its value. It cannot be had at any price by those who are not intentionally searching for it. It cannot be given away. It cannot be purchased for money, for the reason that it comes in two parts. One part is already in possession of those who are ready for it. The secret serves equally well all who are ready for it. Education has nothing to do with it. Long before I was born, the secret had found its way into the possession of Thomas A. Edison, and he used it so intelligently that he became the world's leading inventor, although he had but 3 months of schooling. The secret was passed on to a business associate of Mr. Edison. He used it so effectively that, although he was then making only $12,000 a year, he accumulated a great fortune and retired from active business while still a young man. You will find his story at the beginning of the first chapter. It should convince you that riches are not beyond your reach, that you can still be what you wish to be, that money, fame, recognition, and happiness can be had by all who are ready and determined to have these blessings. How do I know these things? You should have the answer before you finish this book. You may find it in the very first chapter or on the last page. While I was performing the 20-year task of research, which I had undertaken at Mr. Carnegie's request, I analyzed hundreds of well-known men, many of whom admitted that they had accumulated their vast fortunes through the aid of the Carnegie secret. Among these men were Henry Ford, William Wrigley Jr., John Wanamaker, James J. Hill, George S. Parker, E. M. Statler, Henry L. Daugherty, Cyrus H. K. Curtis, George Eastman, Charles M. Schwab, Harris F. Williams, Dr. Frank Gunsalas, Daniel Willard, King Gillette, Ralph A. Weeks, Judge Daniel T. Wright, Theodore Roosevelt, John W. Davis, Elbert Hubbard, Wilbur Wright, William Jennings Bryan, Dr. David Starr Jordan, J. Ogden Armour, Arthur Brisbane, Woodrow Wilson, William Howard Taft, Luther Burbank, Edward W. Bach, Frank A. Muncy, Albert H. Gary, Dr. Alexander Graham Bell, John D. Rockefeller, Thomas A. Edison, Frank A. Vanderlip, F. W. Woolworth, Colonel Robert A. Dollar, Edward A. Filene, Edwin C. Barnes, Clarence Darrow, John H. Patterson, Julius Rosenwald, Stuart Austin Weir, Dr. Frank Crane, George M. Alexander, J. G. Chapline, Honorable Jennings Randolph, Arthur Nash. These names represent but a small fraction of the hundreds of well-known Americans whose achievements, financially and otherwise, prove that those who understand and apply the Carnegie secret reach high stations in life. I have never known anyone who was inspired to use the secret who did not achieve noteworthy success in his chosen calling. I've never known any person to distinguish himself or to accumulate riches of any consequence without possession of the secret. From these two facts, I draw the conclusion that the secret is more important as a part of the knowledge essential for self-determination than any which one receives through what is popularly known as education. What is education anyway? This has been answered in full detail. As far as schooling is concerned, many of these men had very little. John Wanamaker once told me that what little schooling he had, he acquired in very much the same manner as a modern locomotive takes on water, by scooping it up as it runs. Henry Ford never reached high school, let alone college. I'm not attempting to minimize the value of schooling, but I am trying to express my earnest belief that those who master and apply the secret will reach high stations, accumulate riches, and bargain with life on their own terms, even if their schooling had been meager. Somewhere, as you read, the secret to which I refer will jump from the page and stand boldly before you, if you are ready for it. When it appears, you will recognize it. Whether you receive the sign in the first or the last chapter, stop for a moment when it presents itself and turn down a glass, for that occasion will mark the most important turning point of your life. We pass now to chapter 1 and to the story of my very dear friend who has generously acknowledged having seen the mystic sign and whose business achievement are evidence enough that he turned down a glass. As you read his story and the others, remember that they deal with the important problems of life, such as all men experience. The problems arising from one's endeavor to earn a living, to find hope, courage, contentment, and peace of mind, to accumulate riches, and to enjoy freedom of body and spirit. Remember, too, as you go through the book, that it deals with facts and not with fiction, its purpose being to convey a great universal truth through which all who are ready may learn not only what to do, but also how to do it, and receive, as well, the needed stimulus to make a start. As a final word of preparation, before you begin the first chapter, may I offer one brief suggestion which may provide a clue by which the Carnegie secret may be recognized. It is this: all achievement, all earned riches, have their beginning in an idea. If you are ready for the secret, you already possess one half of it. Therefore, you will readily recognize the other half the moment it reaches your mind. The author, Napoleon Hill, 1937.